Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to dive deep into GPUs. We're not just going to talk about what they are, but how to really get the most out of them, like how to optimize them for, maximum performance. We're going way beyond the basics, like stuff that really separates, the casual user from like a true expert, optimization expert.
Yeah, exactly. And to do that, we're going to break down the whole structure of GPUs. We'll look at kernel optimization techniques, and even some revolutionary approaches like flash attention, which are, really changing things, especially for AI.
Sounds pretty good. So maybe we should just start with like the basics of GPU architecture. Like, what makes them so unique and powerful?
Well, GPUs are designed for parallel processing, right? And it's their hierarchical structure that really makes this possible. You can think of it kind of like an army, with streaming multiprocessors or SMs acting as like the generals. And each SM, it commands this battalion of cores, kind of like the soldiers carrying out the instructions.
Okay, so like an army needs logistics, right? So GPUs have this multi-tiered memory system.
Exactly. Each core has its own registers, which is the fastest memory, but it has, limited capacity, like a soldier's backpack only holding essentials.
And then we have shared memory and L1 cache. That's like a step up in the hierarchy.
Yeah, thinking that like a shared tent, maybe for a squad. Faster to access than going all the way back to the central supply depot, which is a global memory in this analogy. And this hierarchy allows for this, massive parallel processing, so many tasks happening all at the same time.
Okay, so we got this army of cores all ready for action. So how do we actually tell them what to do?
Well, that's where kernels come in. Kernels are these pieces of code that are executed on the individual cores, like specific instructions, to each soldier. We use languages like CUDA or Triton to actually write those instructions.
Okay, so the host code, which is running on the CPU, it prepares the data, right? So it's like the command center sending orders to the soups on the ground. I mean, the GPU.
Exactly. That's a great way to think about it. The host code sends these orders in the form of data and kernels to the GPU for processing.
And then these kernels, they're organized into warps and blocks, which makes things even more efficient, right? So what exactly are those?
So warps are groups of 32 threads, like squads of soldiers, working together. And blocks are larger groups of those warps, so kind of like platoons carrying out a coordinated mission. And organizing them like this into warps and blocks is it's really important for optimizing performance because it dictates how the work is shared and executed across all those cores.
Interesting. So understanding how things are organized like this is really key to optimization.
It's like a military strategist, considering the battlefield, deploying troops effectively, writing efficient kernels. You have to understand these constraints.
Right. So when it comes to actually writing the kernels, are there different tools for this? Like each with their own pros and cons?
Yeah, there are. You have PyTorch, which is, very user-friendly, but maybe not the fastest. And then there's Torch.compile, which offers a good balance of ease of use and speed.
And if you really want peak performance, there's Triton and CUDA.
Exactly. It's about choosing the right tool for the job, you know? A simple hammer is fine for basic tasks, but for something more demanding, you need, specialized tools.
Right. So let's say we've, chosen our weapon and crafted our kernel. How do we make sure it runs as efficiently as possible on this, hierarchical battlefield?
Well, one of the most important things is memory access optimization. You want to minimize, trips back and forth to that central supply depot, the global memory, because it's the slowest part.
Okay, so how do we actually do that? I've heard of this term memory coalescing.
Memory coalescing is essential. Yeah, it's like imagine soldiers, right, all grabbing supplies, but in an orderly line, each one accessing consecutive memory locations. This allows the GPU to grab data in larger chunks, so it reduces latency.
Okay, that makes sense. But how much of a difference does it actually make, like in the real world?
Oh, in some cases, memory coalescing can boost memory throughput by like 10 times. Let's say, for example, you're doing matrix multiplication. This is super common in deep learning. Just by changing how threads access the data, you can get massive performance gains.
Wow. 10 times faster just by being smart about memory access. That's pretty amazing. So, what other tricks can we use?
Well, another powerful technique is tiling. You know how we talked about soldiers storing supplies in a shared tent? So, tiling uses the faster shared memory to store and reuse data. It means we don't have to keep going back to that slower global memory.
So instead of those constant trips back to the central depot, they have a local cache.
Yeah, precisely. And this can lead to even more performance gains, sometimes more than 40%, reaching speeds up to 6.6 TFL OPSOs. That's, trillions of floating point operations every second.
Wow, those are crazy speeds. Are there any other memory optimization techniques?
Yeah, we have threat coarsening. We merge multiple threads to reduce shared memory access, like one soldier carrying multiple supplies instead of many soldiers each carrying one. So, you know, less traffic going in and out of the shared memory.
Right. Less congestion means faster operations. Makes sense.
And finally, there's minimizing control divergence. Remember how warps execute instructions in lockstep? Control divergence happens when threads within a warp start, you know, following different paths, like soldiers getting separated, having to wait for each other.
So keeping them all in sync is really key.
Exactly. Avoiding those unnecessary branches in the code can really help prevent this and keep things running smoothly. Okay, now before we move on, there's another concept I want to touch on, and that's fused kernels.
Okay, fused kernels. Sounds interesting. Tell me more.
So think of it like completing multiple tasks in one trip, instead of going back and forth, you know, between the base and the battlefield.
So you combine multiple kernels into one, like a super kernel?
Yeah, exactly. Streamlining everything. And this reduces the communication overhead between the CPU and GPU, right? Which makes things run faster, especially for more complex tasks.
Yeah, I just see how that'd be super beneficial. So where are these fused kernels, you know, really used?
Well, one area is transformer models, especially optimizing layer normalization. But before we go into that, let's talk about the star of the show today, flash attention.
Yeah, flash attention. I've heard it's pretty revolutionary. So what makes it so special?
It really is. Flash attention is a game changer. It's all about how it handles memory. See, traditional attention mechanisms need to make this like attention matrix, which can be massive, especially with long sequences, right? And it just puts a strain on memory bandwidth, you know, creates a bottleneck.
So flash attention bypasses that bottleneck. How does it do that?
It does. It's really ingenious. Instead of building the whole attention matrix, it computes the information in small chunks right within the faster shared memory. So it uses less memory and speeds up computation at the same time.
Wow, win-win. No wonder it's become so popular. And what about flash attention 2 and 3? Are they even more revolutionary?
Well, flash attention 1 was, you know, the big breakthrough. Versions 2 and 3 really focused on making it work even better on different hardware. Flash attention 2 minimized non-matmul operations, and version 3, it was tailored to the latest NVIDIA Hopper architecture, especially for, you know, FP8 and Tensor Core support.
FP8, that sounds like a whole other level of optimization.
Yeah, it is. It involves using lower precision formats for calculations, which can really speed things up. And actually, we're going to delve into that and the whole world of mixed precision training in the next part of our deep dive. Welcome back. So, as promised, let's get into mixed precision training. It's a technique that can really boost performance on GPUs.
Okay, so it's like we're fine-tuning the ammunition for our GPU soldiers, making them even more efficient in battle.
That's a great analogy. So the standard in deep learning has always been using FP32, which is single precision floating point format, for numerical precision, you know. It means that each number uses 32 bits of memory.
32 bits for every number. That seems like a lot, especially with these huge models with millions or billions of parameters.
Exactly. And that's where mixed precision train comes in. We use lower precision formats like FP16, BF16, or even FP8 for some of the calculations.
So we're kind of like using smaller units of measurement, trading a bit of accuracy for speed.
Exactly. It's like using a lower resolution picture. You might lose some detail, but it uses less space and loads faster, right?
Right. That makes sense. But wouldn't use have lower precision, you know, make our model less accurate?
Yeah, that's the challenge. That's why it's called mixed precision. You can't just switch everything to lower precision without, you know, using some clever tricks.
Okay, so what are those tricks? How do we make sure we're not sacrificing too much accuracy?
Well, let's start with FP16 and BF16 training. Those are the most common lower precision formats. One important technique is to keep an FP32 copy of the weights. It's like having this master blueprint in high resolution, even if we're working with a lower res model for some of the operations.
So it's like our referent point to make sure we don't drift too far from the original, more precise values.
Right. And then there's loss scaling. Imagine you're amplifying a weak signal, so it's easier to process. So loss scaling prevents the gradients from getting too small, which can be a problem with lower precision.
And I'm guessing the last technique, accumulation, is all about improving the overall accuracy, right?
You got it. Accumulation basically means summing up the intermediate results in F32 before we convert them back to the lower precision format. Like taking multiple measurements with a less precise tool and then averaging them to get a more accurate reading.
Clever. So with FP16 and BF16, we get more speed without losing too much accuracy. But you mentioned FP8 early. Is that even faster?
FP8 is faster, yeah. But it's also a lot more challenging to use. You need even more sophisticated techniques to make it stable.
Yeah, I can imagine. Using even lower precision must make it even more likely to run into overflow and underflow issues?
Exactly. One promising technique to address this is per-tile range normalization. It basically normalizes values within small chunks of data, so it's less sensitive to outliers.
So it's like having a bunch of carefully calibrated measuring tools for different parts in the data.
Exactly. And a good example of large-scale FP8 training is DeepSeek V3. They trained a massive model using FP8 and got really impressive results.
That's pretty cool. It sounds like FP8 is still in its early stages, but it has huge potential, right?
Absolutely. It's still experimental, but it's probably going to become the standard soon, maybe even surpassing BF16. And who knows, we might even see FP4 training in the future.
Wow, FP4, that would be amazing. Okay, so we've covered so much already, from GPU architecture and memory optimization to kernels, flash attention, and mixed precision training. But before we wrap up, I want to go back and look more closely at how we actually optimize those kernels, especially when it comes to memory access. You know, it's one thing to understand the concepts, but seeing how it's applied in practice would be really helpful.
I agree. Let's go back to some of those key memory access optimization techniques and break down how they work in, like, real-world examples, like with matrix multiplication.
All right, let's get into the details of kernel optimization. We talked about memory coalescing before, but how does it actually work, say, with matrix multiplication?
Matrix multiplication is a great example, yeah, because it's so fundamental to deep learning. If you just implemented it naively, the threads might be accessing memory in a really scattered way. Like, imagine soldiers running all over the place grabbing supplies from random spots. It'd be super slow and inefficient.
Yeah, definitely not the organized efficiency we want. So how does memory coalescing bring order to that chaos?
Well, with memory coalescing, we make sure that threads in a warp are accessing memory locations that are right next to each other, like those soldiers, you know, all lining up to get their supplies in order. It minimizes wasted movement, and that makes the whole process much faster.
So it's about making the access pattern match how the GPU actually fetches data.
Exactly. And the best part is you often just need small tweaks in the code, like how you calculate the memory addresses, and that can make a huge difference.
You said we could see a tenfold increase in throughput, right? That's a massive gain for a relatively small change.
Absolutely. And those gains mean faster execution time for your deep learning models. Okay, now let's move on to tiling.
Tiling? That was like setting up a forward supply depot using that faster shared memory. How does that work with matrix multiplication?
So in matrix multiplication, you can divide the matrices into smaller blocks or tiles and load them into shared memory. So the threads in a block can reuse that data multiple times without going back to global memory.
It's like having those shared tents closer to the front lines, so the folders can grab what they need quickly.
Perfect analogy. The code for tiling, you have to carefully coordinate how those threads are loading and accessing these tiles, making sure they don't, you know, overwrite each other's data or try to access data that isn't loaded yet. Synchronization is key here.
You mentioned sync threads before in CUDA. That's what we use to synchronize the threads.
That's right. Synchronization is essential for tiling to work correctly. And the performance gains are really impressive. Like, benchmarks have shown that tiling can boost memory throughput to over 400 gigabytes per second, and it can cut the kernel execution time by up to 43%.
Wow, those are serious numbers. And getting to 6.6 TFL ops is just incredible.
It is, yeah. But even with tiling, there can still be some bottlenecks. Shared memory access is faster than global memory, sure, but it can still cause stalls if too many threads are trying to access it at once.
So even with those forward supply depots, there's still some waiting time.
Yeah, and that's where thread coarsening comes in.
That's when we, like, merge multiple threads. Right. So it's like one soldier carrying multiple supplies instead of many soldiers each carrying one.
Precisely. We reduce the number of shared memory accesses, which minimizes those stalls and improves performance.
Less congestion, things move faster.
Okay. And what about minimizing control divergence?
Right. So control divergence happens when threads within a warp, you know, they take different paths because of branching in the code, like those soldiers getting separated, and then they have to wait for each other, which slows everything down.
So to be really efficient, we want to keep all those threads in sync.
Exactly. That means being smart about how you structure the code to minimize branching, especially within those warp computations.
So we've covered a lot: memory coalescing, tiling, thread coarsening, and minimizing control divergence. It's amazing how much we can optimize these kernels.
And even if you're not writing the kernels yourself, understanding these concepts can give you a much better understanding of how GPUs actually work. It's like a behind-the-scenes look at high-performance computing. Absolutely. This whole deep dive has been incredible. We've learned about GPU architecture, memory hierarchies, kernel optimization, flash attention, and even mixed precision training. It's amazing how much depth there is to this.
It really is. And we hope this deep dive has been useful for you, given you some insights into how GPUs work and how we unlock their true potential.
So to wrap things up, GPUs really thrive on parallelism and efficient memory access. Optimizing those kernels is key to getting the best performance. Techniques like memory coalescing, tiling, and thread coarsening are super important. We also explored flash attention and mixed precision training, which are pushing the boundaries of deep learning. And while the world of GPUs is always changing, these fundamental principles we've talked about, they're going to be essential for anyone who wants to harness the power of these amazing processors.
Yeah, I think that's a great summary. The pursuit of performance is never over. And as new hardware and software come out, the quest to optimize GPUs will just keep driving things forward, you know, in AI, scientific computing, and all sorts of other fields.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into GPUs. We hope you enjoy it, and we'll see you next time as we explore another exciting area of tech.